I am looking to add a lot of smoke. Do I need to get out of here?
I don't know, sir. If you do, the sheriff's department will advise you.
Okay, well, I just called 911, and they directed me to you.
Sir, I understand. We have no idea. We have fires all over the county. Do what you need to do. Bye.
We just opened it up, and it was like a roaring ocean of fire. The whole hill was just roaring.
911, what is your emergency?
We're wondering if we needed to evacuate.
If you see fire by your house, then you should probably call 911 and evacuate.
Should we be driving towards East Road, or should we go towards Willis?
I don't really know, sir. You would have to look at where the fire is and not go that way.
What's on fire?
A transformer blew, a PG&E transformer, and it lit up a whole window.
Is there a house on fire? What's on fire?
It was on fire all around me. I immediately thought we were going to die and that was it. We had waited too long.
Copy, unit to assist 2320 Atlas Peak Road for parents trapped in a garage.
Additional entrapment.
Project 2, I got a report of an elderly couple in a house trapped.
On October 8th of last year, massive wildfires broke out across Northern California. 44 people died, 21,000 structures were damaged or destroyed, and the fires burned an area the size of Maryland and Delaware combined. Even today, it's unknown what sparked the fires in the first place. This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, and the scale of those fires in Northern California was huge. But even while the fires still burned, it was clear that emergency services were simply overwhelmed. Suki Lewis is a reporter for KQED News in San Francisco, and she and Lisa Pickoff-White, who's a data reporter for KQED, immediately started investigating what went wrong with California's response to the fires, and they did it in partnership with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting.
So on the first day of the fire, Suki started actually going out in the field to report while another coworker and I, Risa Lago, started filing public record requests for 911 calls and also starting to listen to dispatch, that kind of radio chatter between first responders. And the reason we were doing that is we were hearing already from community members that there were these big delays in evacuation orders going out. We were also really curious about what had caused the fires. I mean, we knew that there was this big warning actually from the National Weather Service that the conditions were very ripe for a fire. But we had heard from people that there were all of these electrical incidents also going on. And one of our first big revelations from those tapes as they started coming in and the three of us started going through them, also with a team of reporters, was that actually by 4 p.m., there already were these kind of down power lines, sparking power lines, transformer explosions being reported, you know, throughout a pretty wide area in two different counties. And by 7 p.m., those start coming in almost every few minutes. And the problem with electrical incidents, really, is that they build on each other, right? So once, you know, some power lines go down, then that power has to go somewhere. So it goes out to other electrical lines, overpowers them, and that can eventually cause these transformer explosions. And it kind of becomes this vicious circle where the more of the grid goes down, the more dangerous it can become. And so we started hearing a lot of calls like this one.
PG&E emergency dispatch.
Hi, I need this Redcom. I need you expedited for a wires down that started a structure fire.
Is there anyone trapped in that location?
Nope. Fire's on scene. I have to go. Bye-bye.
There were actually 172 different fires happening kind of all at the same time. Some of them may have been electrical and some of them, you know, there, like I said, there were these really high winds that could be spreading as sparks are flying. And what could happen in this situation, and actually happens sometimes on the East Coast or the southern parts of the United States for hurricanes, for instance, is that you preemptively shut down the power grid when you know that there's going to be these high winds. But we don't do that in Northern California. And what really interested me about that is that we do that in Southern California. In fact, they had done that more than 16 times before these fires began this summer in Southern California to stop these fires from starting, you know, before.
Well, Suki, you can hear the urgency in that caller that Lisa just played concerning the electrical fires. And I imagine that with dispatch all over the area on October 8th and 9th, that was repeated a lot.
Just to
kind of give you a sense of how many people were calling in. You know, we have personally listened to thousands of calls from the night of these fires, and they were just people were calling into 911 to report smoke, to report fires, to report these electrical problems. And this created its own kind of vicious cycle because people were calling in sometimes, you know, just to report smoke, and that's then clogging the line for people who actually really need help and are trapped behind a fire line and need to get information, you know, to first responders. And what we also found out is that these kind of electrical problems that Lisa was talking about drained resources early. So they were sending out like a fire engine to this little fire, a fire engine to this little fire. And so then when these massive fires, the Atlas Peak fire or the Tubbs fire, which was, you know, just completely devastating and burned into the city of Santa Rosa, when those first started taking off, resources were already depleted. And so there wasn't people to send when these massive blazes took off. And so these communication failures also start to kind of build one on top of the other. And people who are trying to call 911 get a busy signal. They don't know what to do. And so they keep calling. And 911 operators are kind of stuck in the situation where they can't get the information they need. So they don't know what to tell people.
Holy Mother of God, can I help you?
I want to help you.
We need help bad.
You want me to head that way?
Yes.
Over to Calistoga?
I have no idea. We have like 9 fires out of control. We're out of control. Mandatory evacuation.
And this, I want to go to a fire, but whatever you want.
Starting here, I'm sure we'll send you.
Okay, bye.
So, Lisa, people calling in electrical fires all around the area, communication between the fire department and emergency responders chasing electrical fires, also trying to respond to the massive big fires, these big issues out there. Then there's also the issue of evacuation, getting people out of neighborhoods, homes that might be threatened. What did you find?
Yeah, so what we found was that there were delays between when first responders on the ground were seeing these fires and asking for evacuation orders, and those evacuation orders really reaching people. And there's actually a couple of problems to unpack here. So one of the first problems is, you know, what we saw several times, there was an hour delay, like I said, between a firefighter seeing that fire and actually these evacuation orders going out. And one reason that that was happening is because, like Suki said, there was this kind of big clogging of the machinery. Because in this case, on that night, what was happening is that actually firefighters were kind of calling their chief. Then their chief was calling 911 operators because the dispatch is actually the same place. So those calls all are going to the same place, whether you're trapped by the fire or you're a fire chief trying to order an evacuation. It's all going to the same dispatch center. So in one case, we actually even heard a fire chief put on hold for a period of time who's trying to say, hey, we have to send out mandatory evacuations right now. People's lives are in danger. And what we also saw is that counties have to decide how to send out these emergency alerts, right? So they have a couple of options. They can send out what's called wireless emergency alerts. And those are those amber alerts that set off your cell phone and everyone is really familiar with. And in Sonoma County, they actually had the capability to do that and chose not to because they were afraid of mass panic. What a lot of counties ended up doing instead is sending out these kind of texts and emails for opt-in systems that you have to kind of know about beforehand. And these fires were really building in the middle of the night. And so you have, texts going out to people at like 2 a.m. who are maybe not receiving them. And at this point, actually, the fires had also burnt down along with homes. The fires had burnt down cell phone towers and cables. So some people's landlines weren't even operable.
Well, you and your colleagues in this report, as you said, listened to thousands of 911 calls and other emergency calls from those fires. And for all of the shortcomings and all of the confusion, Suki, I'm sure that you also found some examples of heroism or first responders who saved lives.
Absolutely. And like the kind of critique and the look back at a lot of this is to look at systems and where they failed and how they could be improved. And I think what we found time and time again is that individuals acted completely heroically, went above and beyond to save their neighbors. You know, first responders did absolutely put their lives at risk to save other people. And one of those people that we talked to was California Highway Patrol helicopter pilot Pete Gavitt, who flew to this place called Atlas Peak. That's this peak in the hills above the city of Napa with this one road in and one road out where a lot of people got trapped when the Atlas Peak fire broke out.
We were just, both of us just sick because we would hear, you know, family of four trapped here or people trying to survive. And there, we heard people climbing into their water tanks to survive, and we couldn't help them. So it was a sick feeling.
That pilot and his co-pilot actually ended up rescuing 26 people off of Atlas Peak, flying them off when the road out, the one road out, was blocked by trees and power lines. And so I think he was just one of many heroes who kind of showed up to save people that night.
So, Lisa, what are state officials saying here in response? It's an overwhelming disaster, and that's understandable. Do they see a systemic problem here, lessons learned for next time, and any plan on how to do things differently?
Yeah, so actually we are seeing some changes both on the federal, national, and even local level. One of the big changes actually has been a national one with the FCC to those kinds of wireless emergency alerts. So one reason that, you know, local officials here were afraid to use them was because they couldn't target really specific areas and because there were some limitations to them. And actually the FCC this winter changed some of that so that now those messages can go to more specific geographic areas, and also they can be longer alerts. They used to just be 90 characters. And also soon they'll be available in Spanish language, which especially actually for an area like Northern California, which has a substantial amount of Spanish-speaking residents, is very important. And then also locally, we've seen that, for instance, 911 operators are getting new scripts so that they know what to tell people who are calling when they're trapped by fire.
Yeah, I think one of the other big lessons that we're seeing coming out of this is that sometimes no one is coming to save you. And you need to know what your risk is, know what your wildfire risk is, know what your escape routes are, have your go bag ready, and kind of the personal responsibility angle that comes into this. And so I think the, you know, Office of Emergency Services here, the director, Mark Ghilarducci, was really saying as we kind of enter this new normal that, you know, these massive events are becoming more likely and more intense with climate change, that all Californians and really everyone across the country kind of needs to understand that things have changed.
Suki Lewis and Lisa Pickoff White reported this story along with Marisa Lagos for KQED in San Francisco. Suki, Lisa, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
KQED reported this investigation in partnership with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. You can find links to their investigation on our website at thetakeaway.org.
Kyle Preston from Santa Rosa, California. I did not receive any emergency information from my government official. I received info by word of mouth and turned to a local radio station for information. I decided to voluntarily evacuate at about 3 a.m. October 9th. After looking outside and seeing the sky glowing orange to the north and east of my home.
Harrowing accounts of the fires in Northern California. You can share your stories from the California wildfires with us on the Takeaways Facebook page.